Now, not only is it a fantastic Tuesday, it is Melbourne Cup Day. Do you have any plans for this afternoon? Maybe you're clocking off a little bit early, maybe you have an office sweep going, or maybe the whole spectacle makes you just a little bit uncomfortable with all the gambling and the animal welfare concerns. Cup Day has over 150 years of history behind it, though, so it doesn't look like it's going anywhere anytime soon. So I guess the question is, can we make the Melbourne Cup kinder on the horses that make the race possible? Joining us now is Paul McGreevy. He's a Professor of Animal Behaviour and Animal Welfare Science from the School of Veterinary Science at the University of Sydney. Paul, thanks so much for chatting to us this morning.
Pleasure, Tess.
As an equine expert, I guess to start off with, how do you feel when the Spring Carnival rolls around each year?
Well, I do enjoy looking at horses, and these are very glossy animals, and they've been very well groomed and prepared. But I probably know a bit too much about what's going on with the insides of the horse to truly celebrate what I'm seeing. My PhD was on the abnormal behaviours that horses show when they're stabled, and about 10% of them develop obsessive compulsive disorders, which they're never shed. They just accumulate these repetitive behaviours. So they're of concern. And 80% of stabled horses, including race horses, of course, have gastric ulcers. So there are a couple of things that I can't ignore when I see those magnificent animals being paraded before racing.
And so when you say insides, it is talking about mental as well as physical health of the horse.
Yeah, that's right. That's these stereotypic behaviours, as they're known, are the horse's response to being confined and being on quite unusual diets. So we see pacing up and down, and what's called crib biting, where the horses engulf air. So the pacing up and down is a response to social frustration, being isolated, and the gulping of air is a response to the inappropriate use of concentrated food rather than forage, rather than chewable food. The interesting thing about these behaviours is that they should really act as warnings about the conditions of all horses in stables, but very often the animals that show these abnormal behaviours are treated as unwelcome freaks, for want of a much better word, and they are often isolated because there's a fear of them spreading the behaviour to others, which is yet to be demonstrated. So I see them as sentinels for what we could improve upon in the way we manage stables.
And for the race itself, I think probably the most in-your-face example of things to be concerned about is the whips. What are some of the laws around whipping in Australia?
Well, we do have rules around whipping. So you can whip up to five times before the 100-metre mark, and then the final 100 metres, the jockeys are allowed to whip at liberty. And that means that within the rules, you can get 18 whip strikes into each horse. And that compares poorly with the UK, where the cap is 7 whip strikes in total for flat races and 8 for jumps races.
Ooh, that's... I'm imagining, you know... I don't know if it would be comparable to, caning, but 18, it seems like a lot of lashes.
Well, yeah, there's a concern there that if you're hitting an area that has been struck already, then there is a true risk of compounded damage. We'd very much like to study what's going on at the site of impact with thermographic cameras, but we've been denied the opportunity to do that.
And for the horses that potentially aren't fast enough or they do get injured racing, we do see those awful videos come out every few years. We've all heard the very dark jokes, but what actually, I guess, happens to those horses?
Well, the former racing horse is not necessarily the ideal riding horse because we don't fit them with excellent brakes. It's all about racing and therefore acceleration. And in fact, we often ride them with the brakes on, with the reins tight. When I ride a horse and I tighten the reins, I want the horse to slow down. So there's quite a lot of counter conditioning that we have to consider in the the work of a racehorse compared to a riding horse. So they do need quite a bit of retraining. But they very often can excel in the show ring because they are beautiful animals. And because they're athletes, they can also be used for eventing and show jumping. So in the right hands, the right horse can have a second career.
And just before I do let you go, Paul, what would you ideally like to see? Industry regulations would you like to see to make horse racing kinder on the horses?
Well, Tess, I think the time has come to have an authentic debate about whip-free racing. The RSPCA has called for jockeys to carry the whip, but only use it if they need to for safety reasons. And the logic there is, it seems pretty clear to me that the fastest horse that's best prepared and best ridden will win. So it doesn't offend me to think of a cup race without the whip. I think we will eventually get there. And we've had whip-free racing in Norway for 30 years. And in each race, a horse wins. So I think we've got a lot to learn from the Norwegian experience.
Well, Paul, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for chatting to us this morning.
Thanks, Tess.
That was Professor Paul McGreevy from the School of Veterinary Science at the University of Sydney, chatting to us about how we can make the Melbourne Cup just a bit nicer on the horses that are involved. Maybe stricter regulations could make the sport a lot safer for the animals. But yes, we'll get all the links for you up on the podcast as well.